Are you filled with fear, doubt, worry about the future of our country? Do you feel the urgency to act before it's too late? If yes, then this podcast is for you. It's time for us all to confront the critical issues threatening our nation's fabric, our democracy itself, irregardless of our political stance. If you're ready to face reality, handle the tough questions, and find real solutions, then here's your host, Debbie Lynn Molyneux.
Welcome to the Terrified Nation podcast. I'm your host, Debbie Lynn Molyneux. Can we save it? That's what we're exploring in this podcast series. And for me, the answer is a resounding yes, we can. And we must. Now, this show is where we explore alternatives to being afraid. And in the first five episodes, I offered a background framework that I recommend you listen to because it provides a good foundation for what now? As we interview our own guests who have gone from being afraid or angry or hopeless to become advocates for our nation to live into the promise of our founders, each one of them dedicating themselves to a better future. And I like to start each show with a question that we'll explore together today. And today's question is, how can our personal journey inform our beliefs around faith and democracy? So with us today is Paul Swearengen. And Paul is an author, creator, licensed minister, co-host of the Evangelical-ish podcast, and he's known for asking hard questions about religion and culture as Unconventional Pastor Paul on social media. Paul is the author of a novel entitled Religiously Right, Religiously Wrong, A Modern Day Parable. And as a life coach and mentor, Paul leads a community of people pursuing emotional and spiritual well-being together. As a person with they-them pronouns, Paul is a neurodivergent multiple who calls himself fearfully and wonderfully weird. Paul is married to their spouse, Ashley, who is a former mayor of their hometown in Fresno, California. And they are a proud father to two amazing human beings. Paul, welcome to the Terrified Nation podcast.
Yeah, thanks, Debbie Lynn. I'm excited to be with you and have this discussion.
Well, and just a little background, like this is a research project to imagine a future that we actually want for ourselves. And so as we go through the interview, just keep in mind that this is about your preferred future, not about what you believe is likely or probable. And as you see into your preferred future, we're going to do some time travel today. So there's like, you didn't know there was a little sci-fi involved, did you?
Nice. All right. I love it. A little quantum physics, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and we're going to just look forward in your current life. And we recommend somewhere between 2 and 20 years. Do you have like a distance in the future you want to go?
You know, 10's a good round number. I'll be 68 then. And yeah, so let's do 10.
All right. Well, let's take a few deep breaths to as we get into the time machine. You might want to close your eyes for a minute. Follow along if you're listening. And we're going to set the dial here for 2034. And just know that as we get going here, when we arrive, you will still be in your current 2024 self, observing yourself. So we're setting up a little observation post, if you will, to see what has happened and what your preferences have brought about. So, ding, we're arriving in the 2034 station right now. And, you know, the very first question that we have is like, where are we, you, they, in 10 years?
I'll probably still be in Fresno because the sun will probably be married with children then and we'll want to be close by. And of course, our daughter will be out singing somewhere as a professional singer. But yeah, living in California, close to grandchildren and enjoying the fruits of our labor.
I like that. And I'm getting a sense here that you already have some ideas on this next question. And that's, what will you be most proud of? So if you observe your 2034 self, what are you proud of?
Of course, having amazing children will be definitely up there for sure. And a lot of that is not necessarily because of what I've done. They just are amazing human beings that sometimes I'm like, how could you be my child. I actually think I'll be most proud that I spent the last 25 years digging, including those 10, digging into who this person is and displaying for my progeny what it means to actually live into the mess of life and saying what is happening inside of here and leaning into it even when it made others uncomfortable around me so I could be the best version of myself in this life rather than waiting for some sweet by and by of eternity that I get to be good. And so I think stopping some generational trauma that's been through my family line and not allowing that to go on to our children or onto their children. And so I think that'll be what I'm most proud of.
I'm just kind of taking that in for a minute because I know in a lot of the spiritual work that I do, there's a lot of talk about generational trauma and healing generational trauma. And it's really interesting that that's, you know, part of what you're most proud of right now is like stopping that re-injury, if you will, from carrying.
When you realize some of how you react to life is ducking, not only from things that happened in your past, but maybe an ancestor's past, which has been shown to happen in animals in labs, that animals are afraid of things that harmed three generations before that they've never experienced. We're carrying these things. And honestly, the evangelical Christianity I grew up with kept me from being able to discover that because we didn't believe in any of that mystical stuff other than salvation by the cross. And getting to explore that has been so freeing and helpful for me and makes me feel like I'm doing something valuable for my children.
Yeah. And there's also this sense of being fully expressed for who you are.
Yeah,
that I'm hearing as part of what you're also most proud of. You used more words than that, but that's the shorthand my brain encapsulated.
Yeah. I've been an object of shame and self-loathing for the first 50 some odd years of life and learned back there in 2024 to start to say, no, I am fearfully and wonderfully weird. And by the way, all of us are. I like the word weird and reclaiming that, but we could say unique. All of us are unique. And anything that says, no, you need to be a part of the homogenous era and echo chamber and groupthink in which you live creates such damage around us. And that's, from this perspective, that's what was so harmful in the 2020s was the need to be a part of a club and a group in order to have identity, but self-identity and embracing our uniqueness, our weirdness, I think is where we start to be able to stand up for truth rather than having to dissonantly protect a bad narrative.
Yeah, I really love that. And Paul, I just want to share with you, like I was told I was weird the whole time I was growing up. And at some point in time, I think it was in high school, one of my coaches in high school basically said, listen, take the weird label on because it means looked upon favorably by the gods.
I like it.
And that just like released all sorts of tension that I had as that teenage angst around being weird. And so I love that you are also reclaiming that word.
Yeah. What if trying not to be weird was weird?
Right?
And everybody who embraced who they wanted to be, we said, oh, that's normal. What a different world it could be.
Oh, yes. If we were all fully expressed in a way that was respectful and had dignity for shared humanity, I think that's the world I'm going for. And that's part of what this project is about. Like, how do we get from here to there? Yeah.
I think that takes a whole bunch of people on a personal, messy journey, getting to a tipping point where it starts to become societally normal, if I can use the word I want to get rid of, to lean into the mess of life rather than trying to be clean and safe and fit in.
Yeah. Yeah. Amen. Well, let's go back to the interview, to the standard questions, because we're going to diverge and come back, I know, several times. But as you're looking at your 2034 self and you're in Fresno and you've got kids and grandkids around and you have this sense of pride in your life, Walk me through like a typical day. How will you spend your day?
I truly would love still being a social media creator and coach, but I would love to be like nanny to my grandkids. You know, I think I never really had a family experience as a child. And so, yeah, 2034, I'm getting up, I'm helping the kids get ready for school so that my son and daughter-in-law can do what they need to do to go out and change the world. And I'm getting to live life again through the eyes of children by being with them. I just think that would be a fantastic, fantastic life.
Is there any other part of your day, or is it just it? Like the whole thing's about the grandkids.
Yeah, we would get the kids off to school. I would assume, you know, they might be school age by that point. And so then, yeah, I continue to try to be an advocate for change, but I'm hoping in 10 years, some of the things that we battled in 2024 will have passed, because either by some radical cataclysmic need for change or a generational transition, we've decided the way we were doing things in the 20s didn't work anymore.
Well, just a reminder, this is your preferred future, so you can make up any story you want.
All right. So we went through a little bit of a cataclysmic transition because the boomers weren't going to have anything pried from their cold, dead hands, you know. But as that transition happened, that created the need for change. And our wonderful Gen Zers stepped up and said, hey, we can't do life like this anymore and survive. And they renovated and renewed our American system. And it's become amazing how much it cares about people now when it's so used to not care about people.
So wind that then into how you spend your day. So this preferred future has happened, and we're, you know, the transition happened. How does that change how you spend your time?
Wow. Wow. There's a biblical story about the miracle of the Israelites crossing the Jordan River, and the instruction from the divine is take 12 rocks out of the river and stack them up by the river. And whenever then you're walking by with your children or grandchildren and they say, why are those rocks there? You tell them the story of what happened in your community. And so I guess what I'm doing now is recounting for new generations, Gen Alpha, like, oh, this is where we went wrong. And so don't forget that we were there, but this happened. And so how do we memorialize what the transition looked like so we never, ever go back to where we were in 2024? So maybe I'll be a town crier and town historian, just recounting what has happened historically to get us to this place so that we don't forget and go back.
Yeah, I'm reminded of an earlier interview I did with Caroline Klibanoff in episode 6, and she is actually a historian and expert in civic ritual.
Oh,
and
wow.
So I could see like some really fabulous civic rituals like coming forth from this that's similar to your 12 rock story.
Yeah, that is neat, and maybe even some corporate repentance. That we as a society say, oh man, we really did harm people. We harmed the world. We were the worst at climate impact, and just have some formal ceremonial repentance times of that, and apologies to groups of people that we've harmed, and then invitation into renewed relationship. Ooh, I like that. I like that. I want to do that. That's it.
Okay. All right. So, well, we're kind of getting into like the very next question, which was, you know, this is your preferred future in 2034. How will you feel most of the time?
There would have to be a grieving process, because in my future, I assume if I was talking in present self, I would say, I don't know that our system can change without some version of collapse. I hope not with outright conflict, but something would have to be catastrophic to force change, because there's so many people who benefit from the status quo. So my future self would spend some time grieving that we had to go through this really difficult, painful process, and then feeling a sense of gratefulness that it provided opportunity for our children's children and beyond to live in a better space because of those of us who leaned into saying, hey, it's actually not patriotic to not want America to be better than it is. That's not patriotism to say, don't ever criticize. Patriotism is saying, let's be better. Let's get better. Let's not do what we've always done in our history. So yeah, a little bit of grieving, which I think is natural and important, some anger, and then coming through to gratefulness on the other side of like, even though that was painful, it got us to where we are now. And sometimes pain is necessary to move us to a new place.
Yes. Humans don't like to be uncomfortable, so we resist as long as possible.
And I'm glad all of that could happen in 10 years, by the way, because I would worry that it might take longer and I might not be around to see it. But I'm so happy that in 2034, I got to see it.
That's because this is your preferred future. So, well, let's go back. And as you're observing your future self here, what will be your three or, you know, up to five priority values? And you might want to substitute the word qualities if values doesn't work for you.
That we as a society live up to the hope we profess that everyone's created equal, that there is no, and none of it is, as Animal Farm would say, all are equal, some are just more equal than others, that we get away from that type of system, that we truly embrace everyone. So we're actually taking care of everyone with the prosperity of our culture, and we've made that a priority, and that includes even people that come perhaps illegally. We're still going to treat them with generosity as we work through the good solutions of how we got here. So yeah. And I think I would continue to have the value of pointing people toward loving themselves and taking that as a priority, because I truly believe how we got here in 2034 is people starting to lean into the idea of, oh, it really is important to love self. The command to love your neighbor as yourself has an implicit command of self-love in it. And our airplane mask theory told us back then that, oh, putting my mask on first actually is loving the world around me rather than allowing myself to live in a space of depletion. So that loving self is going to continue to be a value that I think we will always have to point towards to help. And then I think continued, how would we talk about allyship in 2034? Of just continually sitting with people of different viewpoints, life experiences, life perspectives than myself, so that I never, ever get stuck in an echo chamber or a groupthink, but am constantly having my mind renewed. So I guess those would are my values here in 2034.
Those are wonderful. I want to shift our focus now a little bit to thinking about the community in which you live in 2034. And what does the community, which you've already identified as Fresno, what does Fresno need to include for your preferred future to be possible?
I know you have history with Fresno, Debbie Lynn, and that one almost tears at my heart to think about. There, as I observe 2034, there's been what my wife and I always called like the bursting of the dam, like what, and it really was this sense of religious self-righteousness that said, oh, if we just do certain things, stand against abortion and gay marriage, then we've done our job as good citizens. And we finally broke through that to see that the history of redlining in our city, the impact it had on historically impoverished communities. And so we see that we took very intentional plans to integrate our city, whereas people no longer could live in the northwest end of our town or in Clovis, our little white flight suburb, and say, oh, everything's good here as long as we have enough cops to keep those people. And we took a lot of the resources to control those people, and we started to use them for integration of our community. And not only did it change us sociologically, but economically, we saw a breakthrough in our city, in a city that had been known for being the Appalachia of California, suddenly is this amazing success story of economic development and growth. And it's just now a beautiful place to live.
Anything else?
I would, and I can ride my bike everywhere. I don't have to have a car to survive in the city anymore. And I love that. And we've built urbanization to where, you know, we now have a walkable city a little bit more than we used to have.
Yeah, that would be a Fresno we're seeing. Yeah.
I'm trying to think of is California still a part of the United States at that point or not? So because of the premise of your show, we'll say yes, we thought about leaving at some point, but we mended those fences and we all stayed together.
Okay. All right. So no national divorce here.
No.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to come back to 2024 now. And I would like to just add this last question before I provide you with an invitation. And that is to think about, is there anything that you can or that you are doing today or in the near future to influence or co-create that Fresno that's going to support your preferred future in 2034?
Yeah, I think much of my mission today is to challenge people to step outside themselves and think about, why do I respond the way that I do? I think many of the conflictual interactions we have sociologically today come from a lack of personal identity. And that creates a sense of somebody's trying to take something from me, and I have to protect what's mine, and they need to go get theirs. And America's this place where everybody can get theirs, and get to a place where we can say, oh, I've had help along the way, and I want to be the helper along the way of others. And that's going to create a bigger pie. So no, I'm not getting something taken from me, but I'm actually getting the joy of giving away and seeing it come back to me in ways I never imagined. So that's my whole mission is to challenge people to love themselves enough to look for facts and look for truth, to say, oh, am I sure this is the way I'm supposed to believe? Is it serving me well, or is it causing me to divide myself from others? And I don't know, it's a frustrating thing at times, but I think it's what I do and what I can do.
You and I met through that work as you started your journey. So I'd like to end our interview with an invitation. And I end every interview with the same invitation, by the way. And it's to spend 5 minutes a day, just five, thinking about this preferred future we've just identified and feeling those feelings and include a sense of awe and wonder. The reason why awe and wonder is important here is because neuroscience research shows us that we will subconsciously create what we focus on. You're a coach, you know this. So the choice is ours. We can actually co-create a future that we prefer, like you're already doing, or we can go to the default dystopian options that media and Hollywood are presenting to us, which quite frankly are not where I want to go.
Okay.
And I do want to have an invitation for listeners here. If you would like to participate in this national research project about your preferred future, visit AmericanFuture.us, and there's a self-interview that you can take. In the meantime, thank you, Paul, for sharing your preferred future with the Terrified Nation podcast and for really providing leadership that challenge our beliefs with dignity and respect for ourselves as well as others. I know that it's a valuable contribution to help people think about a future that we want that we prefer. And you inspire me to do that more.
Same back at you. And I've loved this exercise because it's made me think about what I do and why, and maybe some things I need to tweak in myself as my heart has been dinged along the journey. And so this is a beautiful experience. Thank you.
Yeah. Great to have you, Paul. And in closing today's show, I'd like to thank you, the listeners, for giving a damn about our nation. We may be a terrified nation today, but we can do better. We can save the USA. Join me next time.
So that's it for today's episode of Terrified Nation. Head on over to iTunes or wherever you listen and subscribe to the show. One lucky listener every single week who posts a review on iTunes will win a chance in the grand prize drawing to win a $15,000 private VIP day with Debbie Lynn Molyneux herself. Be sure to head on over to TerrifiedNationPodcast.com and pick up a free copy of Debbie Lynn's gift and join us on the next episode.